Thanks for making Locked On MLB your first listen, as we're available for free on all podcasting catchers.
You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm yours, Paul Francis Sullivan. Look right there. It is. Look right there. From the lower thirds, you can please, I'm imploring you, call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on the 26th day of April, 2022, we're going to be talking about the team that a lot of people are predicting to go to the World Series. And do you know what? The way they've been playing doesn't look like that. It's really going to be that bad of a prediction. I'm talking about the Los Angeles Dodgers. And we're going to make this a crossover episode with Jeff Snyder of Locked On Dodgers. And Walker Buehler of the LA Dodgers had something to say about who had the best night of baseball last night. But you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. Same handle for Instagram. And you can follow me. I'm still at Twitter. I didn't buy Twitter. I tried to. I offered them Built Bars, but I am not the owner of Twitter. But you can follow me on Twitter at Sully Baseball, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And thanks, as I said at the top, so much for making us your first listen. And do you know what your second listen should be? I'll tell you what your second listen should be. Your second listen should be Locked On Dodgers. And the host of the Locked On Dodgers podcast is friend of the show, Jeff Snyder, the Snydog, is arriving us here with all the bobbleheads behind him. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Hey, I'm going to start this by putting to the test your resolve to not swear on this episode. You said this drop it on the 26th, but I think it's dropping on the 27th.
It's tomorrow. We are recording this, pulling back the curtain. We're recording this on April 25th.
I thought you said this was Wednesday's episode.
Did I say it was Wednesday?
Yeah.
Guess we'll see what happens. We're totally pulling back. I'm reading the Wednesday ads because I did a show. This is my third show.
Oh, see, so it's dropping on Tuesday, Sunday. But it's dropping on Tuesday. I should have known better than to doubt you, Sully. You're a professional podcaster, man.
That's right. I make the big Blue Nile box, okay? I make the Athletic Green box. I make Athletic Green is what I do. Yeah, well, because I posted, we did a show on the host of Locked On Tigers was on talking about Miguel Cabrera. Oh, and nice. So, you know, we talked a little bit about that. I had my show with Millard on Monday. By the way, it's Scott. I blanked for a second. Scott Bentley is the host of Locked On Tigers. I almost called Millard Thomas the host of Locked On Tigers. I'm just bringing in all these Locked On hosts.
To give you a chance to recap what you've done so far this week in case anybody doesn't listen every day like they should.
Yeah, like they should. Are you trying to tell me someone's not having it to their first listen? By the way, all the games are in the books. For those of you who are waking up on Tuesday, the Giants beat the Brewers in a weird game where a fan was taunting Palo Alto's own Jock Peterson, and then Jock Peterson hit a home run and then taunted the fan right back. The Phillies and the Rockies took an early lead. Joe Girardi was getting his resume ready, and then suddenly the Phillies offense woke up and won that game. Whatever Red Sox players who decided to get vaccinated decided to go to Toronto, and Bo Bichette, who really sounds like he just captured Han Solo in Carbon Freeze, led the Blue Jays with a grand slam to beat them 6-2. The Mets and the Cardinals played the weirdest, wildest game of the night, where the Mets scored 5 runs with 2 outs in the 9th inning to beat the Cardinals 5-2. The Rangers scored 5 unanswered runs to beat the Astros 6-2. Sandoval pitched a great game for the Angels, where they defeated the not Indians, but the Guardians 3-0, and then there was the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. And a really weird thing happened in the Dodger game, and I don't quite understand it. That's why I want to have you on, because it was a strange situation. Walker Buehler, he pitched 108 pitches, but no other pitchers pitched. He pitched 9 innings.
Yeah,
and I didn't think you were allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah, so you know you're young. So there used to be a thing in baseball called a complete game, and
well, that's when a pitcher goes 5 innings and then the relievers come in, right?
No, that's not. Whoa. No, a complete game is when one guy pitches the whole game, and it used to happen a lot, and then it happened less, and then it happened less, and now it happens almost never. This was the first one this year for anybody in Major League Baseball, and to be fair, they're never super common in April, anytime in our lifetimes, you know. April is hard. But, yeah, Buehler was only at 98 pitches through 8 innings, and he told Dave Roberts, I'm staying in, and Dave Roberts said, yeah, you are. And Roberts said after the game that he started thinking around the 7th inning. He recognized that Buehler's stuff was still sharp. He was still had command, had velocity, everything looked good. And so he thought, this might be a complete game. And so he didn't have to be convinced. When Walker Buehler told him he wanted to stay in, Robert said, I'm all for it.
And by the way, I'm not going to be one of these fake macho guys. Talk about like, imagine Bob Gibson thinking about pitch counts or anything like that, because it's a different game now. It does drive me crazy when you see someone who's absolutely dealing and just sort of borderline arbitrarily just gets pulled out. I mean, I'm going to just check right now. I'm on MLB.com. I'm checking the Brewers game. And how many pitches was had Corbin Burns? So he threw 106 pitches, okay, over 6 2/3 innings, and he threw, you know, 2 hits, 2 walks, 11 strikeouts, and they brought in the bullpen who blew the game.
And that was with both Josh Hader and Devin Williams both having pitched each of the last 2 games, I think, and so they knew that their bullpen was shorthanded. Yeah, and that's a tough one. What'd you say, 6 2/3?
6 2/3, 108 pitches.
2 outs in the 7th inning.
Yeah, so I mean,
he wasn't going to throw a complete game anyway.
Right. So, I mean, so go to the other great pitch game. By the way, I listened to the Mets-Cardinals game. That was absolutely surreal. And I am going to bring up a couple of things about that game later. Not necessarily about those two teams playing each other, but some of the things that I liked about the game. It was a little bit of a throwback. In that game, Mikolas threw 95 pitches. He all shutout innings. He didn't let up a run. He only walked one, and he got pulled. And Scherzer threw 101 pitches, and he got pulled after 7. So, you know, I guess once you hit – I mean, look, it was a shortened spring training. And so, you're right. April is not a time when you see guys go 9. But it is a nice throwback when you see it, especially after this weekend where you saw, I think it was 46 Rays pitchers hold the Red Sox to no hits and no runs over 9. And they went into extra innings. And the Sox lost in extra innings, but after they got a couple of runs. But I mean, both teams had thrown, like, the Red Sox had like 5 pitchers at one point, the Rays had 7, and there was a combined 2 hits in the entire game. And I remember thinking, you know, nobody's getting shelled, you know, clearly it's one hit, both, you know, they've combined for 2 hits over 9. But, you know, could one guy maybe pitch a second inning or a third?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation because Kevin Cash's job, Dave Roberts' job, you know, whoever the Cardinals manager, Ollie something, is his job.
Not Mike Schilt. His name is not Mike Schilt.
Not Mike Schilt. Their jobs are to win games and to put the team in the best position to have a successful season. And their job is not to entertain the fans. And I think that's a good thing, but I think there needs to be something counterbalancing that, because it is a form of entertainment. That's why we watch baseball, is to be entertained. And so, yes, for me, the most entertaining thing is for the Dodgers to win. Walker Buehler throwing a shutout was awesome. But my goal this morning when I woke up, I didn't think, I hope Walker Buehler throws a shutout. I thought, I hope the Dodgers win again today. And so Dave Roberts did his job by the Dodgers scoring more runs than the Diamondbacks at the end of the game. But it was very entertaining to see Buehler come back out. Like, it was almost adrenaline inducing as a fan to see Buehler walking back out of the dugout after the eighth inning. So he's coming back for the ninth inning, and, you know, seeing Buehler smile afterwards. Walker Buehler doesn't smile on the baseball field, but as soon as that third out of the ninth inning was made, game's over, and we got to see a Walker Buehler smile, which we hardly ever get to see on the field. And, you know, seeing the high five between him and Will Smith, you know, and seeing him tell Will Smith good job.
Not,
you know,
that Will Smith.
No, this hand made contact with the other hand, not the face. So
Just want to make sure everyone knows that we're not going there.
As a baseball fan, that was very entertaining. It's not Dave Roberts' job to entertain me, but I'm glad it happened.
And I think that if there was going to be a game that in this series with Arizona that would merit a complete game, it would be this one with Gonsolin pitching tomorrow. You know, Gonsolin's not going to go nine. You know, I mean, Gonsolin's not a bad pitcher, but you're probably going to lean on your bullpen a little bit with Gonsolin pitching.
And the bullpen was worked heavily in San Diego. And so the Dodgers really needed this. You know, even Buehler giving them eight would have been great. But the fact that he allows the whole bullpen to reset totally sets them up for the next several days, because, you know, they might need that bullpen.
And I think that that's an element that is lost in the game. Not in my day, they went nine no matter what. No, sometimes your day was dumb. Sometimes you should have relieved some pitchers. But when you had that pitcher who would, you know, that you hand the ball to and the bullpen can take a nap, and you know, especially as they were really worked, as you said, they were really worked hard in the San Diego series, to have a game like this where it was in hand, you know, sorry, Miller, the Diamondbacks stink. And so, you know, you could take the chance of saying, okay, we have a totally rested bullpen. So you can go. It's a three-game series they're playing, right? It's not a four-game in Arizona.
Yeah.
So they can win tomorrow. If they win tomorrow, they win the series. And not that they should pull a Aaron Boone and rest everyone and not go for the kill. But, you know, it's important for the Dodgers to win these games they're supposed to win. It's important for them to beat up on the Diamondbacks and everything, because we're seeing that San Francisco is good again. Last year wasn't a fluke. You know, they may not be 107 game win good again, but they're going to be good.
Yeah.
And Rondon has been a great acquisition for them, as has Jock Peterson. And by the way, you know, Peterson has a chance to do something that no one's ever done in the history of baseball.
What's that?
If he's on the Giants roster and the Giants win the World Series, he'll be the first player in baseball history to play for three different teams who all won the World Series in three consecutive years. There have only been two players who've played in three straight World Series with a different team each time. Don Baylor with the 86 Red Sox, 87 Twins, and the 88 Oakland A's, and Eric Hinsky with the 2007 Red Sox, 2008 Tampa Bay Rays, and the 2009 Yankees. So those are the only two who played in three straight World Series with three different teams. Peterson, if they win the World Series, he's on the roster, will be the first to be on the winning team. So there you go.
Now I feel bad that the Dodgers are going to deny Jock that chance at history. Thanks for making me feel bad, Sully.
I'm sorry. But, you know, like a couple weeks ago, you know, Kershaw famously had the perfect game and he got pulled. I don't know what your take on that was. I had zero problem with Dave Roberts doing that.
I'll go one further. It was 8,000% the right decision.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, Clayton Kershaw, his season last year ended because of an arm injury.
Right.
Then he didn't pick up a ball till January because of that injury. And then he was behind in spring training because he didn't know when the lockout was going to end. And then spring training was shorter. And then it was his first start of the season. And as he himself said after the game, his slider had stopped working. And so he wasn't going to complete the perfect game anyway. If they had sent him back out, he was going to lose the perfect game. And so there was no point. The best case scenario is he throws 110 pitches and gets the perfect game. But at what cost? And
Johan it Santana. Wasn't happen. You know, like the point that I made, like other than, you know, the obvious one to bring up is Santana, who got that no-hitter, which, by the way, if they had instant replay back then, it wouldn't have been a no-hitter because it was a replay show that a ball foul that was ball. Called foul was actually a fair ball. So there's that. But also, if I polled every single Dodger fan, let's take a million Dodger fans going into Kershaw's first start, knowing that he was hurt for the postseason last year, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, an adequate Kershaw in last year's postseason, they beat the Braves. You're removing an arm like him. The whole idea is to win a World Series in a full season with this Dodger squad. And no offense, they did what they had to do in 2020 and everything like that. But I'm sure for everyone there, they would like to have this more than one title for this team. You want Kershaw there in October. And if I polled 1 million Dodger fans the night of the, before Kershaw took the hill that day, saying he's going to give you 7 shutout innings, do you take it? I'd get a million yeses.
Yep. Yeah. And if you leave out that perfect game thing, say 7 shutout innings at 80 pitches, are you going to be mad if Dave Roberts pulls him? No. I'm not. The only difference is the perfect game, which is a personal accomplishment. And yeah, it would have been fun to see Kershaw get the perfect game. And if I even thought there was any chance that he could have gotten it, I might feel differently. But he wasn't ever going to throw a perfect game.
But here's two other things, though, because people were talking about – first of all, he already has a no-hitter. So there's
that. And everybody knows that it was basically a perfect game if Hanley Ramirez knew how to play shortstop.
Right. But the other thing is people were saying, oh, this would be his chance to be in the record books and history books. Clayton Kershaw's going to the Hall of Fame. Clay, yeah. This is not like when Philip Humber, I think, threw a perfect game for the White Sox in 2012.
If there was an automated strike zone, he wouldn't have either.
Well, that's probably true. But
last pitch of the game was ball 4.
But when you think about pitchers who are like obscure, like Bud Smith threw a perfect game, or Clay Buchholz threw a no-hitter his second start in the major leagues. There are weird people who have thrown no-hitters in there. Corey Kluber threw one, but with the Yankees. It's like there are some strange no-hitters out there. And for those people, if it was someone like that, some schmuck who just came up from, who's the triple? I almost said Albuquerque. Is it still Albuquerque?
For the Dodgers?
For the Dodgers.
Oklahoma City.
Okay. Sorry. It used to be the Albuquerque Dukes, and I still kind of think of them as that. But they're now the Albuquerque Isotopes. But if it's someone who just came up from the farm or someone who's never had it and this is their chance to have a moment to put their name in the history books, yeah, then I feel frustrated for that pitcher. Clayton Kershaw's all over the Dodger history books, yeah. Okay? So this is not someone who's worried about his legacy being written.
And the other part we haven't even mentioned is this was a decision Clayton Kershaw and Dave Roberts made together. After the sixth inning, Roberts sat down next to Kershaw and they had a conversation. And Kershaw told him, I'm going to do one more inning and then I'm going to be done. And so it's not even Roberts pulled Kershaw in the middle of a perfect game. No, Roberts and Kershaw made the decision that Kershaw's day was over. So, it's almost like condescending for people to say that, of course Kershaw's going to say that he's going to throw his manager under the bus. Like, he's a grown man. He's a Hall of Famer. If he wanted to stay in, he would have told Roberts he wanted to stay in. And then Roberts would have made the right decision and taken him out. But, this was a decision they made together.
Well, and I tell you, one of the things that Dodger fans should be really happy about is the health of Kershaw. And when you think about health, you know what? Our next product and our partner that we have on our next sponsor has a product that I use all the time. It's called Athletic Greens because – you know what? I've been trying to take better care of myself, see if my blood pressure's down, see if I can get my cholesterol down. I'm about to turn 50, okay? I'm nearly a third of my way through my life, and I want to make sure that I'm living better. And now I've been using Athletic Greens for a while, and I'm starting to see, that's not about just weight loss. It's just you're feeling better about how you feel health-wise. Now, what is Athletic Greens? Well, you take one delicious scoop of Athletic Green, and you're absorbing not one, not two, but 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. I don't even know what that last word was, or if I even said it right. And that's how good it is for you. And it can help start your day right with a really interesting blend of ingredients that supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, your recovery, your focus, and aging, all things except your ability to pronounce that word. Now, I use it every day. I take it in the morning. I take it at night. And I've shared it with my family. I've shared it with my cousin. And do you know what? They all agree with me. It helps start your day right and have that energy to get through the day. It's lifestyle friendly. If you're keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, you're GMO, it's GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything. It still tastes great. By the way, I meant no GMOs there. It supports mental clarity, alertness. Athletic Greens uses the best products based on the best science. Okay? And tons of people take a kind of a multivitamin. And it's important to choose one with high-quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. And Athletic Greens is a small micro-habit with big benefits. It's one thing you can do every single day to take great care of yourself. So, right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with a convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills or supplement to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/MLB Network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/MLB Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Now, folks, thanks so much for making Locked On MLB your first listen. Make Locked On Dodgers your second listen. For your next listen, listen to Locked On Now, recaps of Major League Baseball games with analysis from our local experts, including friend of the podcast, Jeff Snyder, taking fans through the season like no other network, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. We are returning to the Locked On crossover with Jeff Snyder of Locked On Dodgers. Now, Mookie Betts got off to a pretty crummy start, but he had a good game against Arizona on Monday night. Got on base a few times, scored a couple. I think he scored a pair of runs. Freeman seems to be everything you'd want from him. And if you're a Dodger fan, you got to be happy that Bellinger is. Your good Bellinger is better than bad Bellinger.
Yeah, that's a heck of an analysis there, Sully.
Thank you very much. And that's why I am the host of the flagship shows. They wanted to have
professional podcaster.
Oh man, that's the sort of analysis you want. Good is better than bad. But do you know what? It is that simple. Is that the Dodgers won 106 ball games with a lousy season from Bellinger last year. And yeah. So if you get a decent performance out of him, not even saying MVP, just a decent performance out of him, then that is an improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's we've kind of seen the same thing this year with other guys. You know, you mentioned Mookie Betts has been struggling. He's just starting to turn it on. He had a two-homer game against the Padres this weekend, followed that up with a four-strikeout game. So, you know, it's still hit or miss, but another solid game. He's starting to hit the ball better, see the ball better. And, but, you know, Betts hasn't really done what he can do yet. Justin Turner has been terrible so far this year. Max Muncy, whether he's still feeling the effects of the elbow injury or whatever it is, he hasn't turned it on yet. You know, Will Smith has been a little bit slow turning it on. And yet the Dodgers are 12-4 because, you know, Cody Bellinger, Freddie Freeman, Trey Turner, Chris Taylor, Gavin Lux, those guys have all been carrying the load. But when you put together a team like the Dodgers did, you don't need everybody to be clicking. Because chances are three or four guys are going to click on any given night, and that's generally all you need to win a game. And but it's been Cody Bellinger more often than probably anybody would have guessed during spring training, because he looked legitimately lost during spring training.
Yeah.
And he just, yeah, whatever. Actually, the big thing is he still can't hit the high fastball very well, but he did this amazing thing. He stopped swinging at the high fastball. If there's a pitch you can't hit. Well,
let me write this down here.
Yeah. You ready?
We're great. We're making, this is groundbreaking analysis.
If there is a pitch you can't hit,
yeah,
do not swing at that pitch. All right. That's a good especially idea. If it's out of the strike zone, which high fastballs usually are. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, but, and it's so much easier said than done. The high fastball, especially. Yeah. I mean, you learn from the time you're a kid pitching. Everybody wants to swing at that high fastball because it's right there at their eye level. It's right where they can see it the best.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to hit. And so the fact that he stopped swinging at it is, it sounds simple, but it's really, really a credit to him that he has been able to identify that, stop swinging at it, make them bring it down, because anything down below the waist, he is really, really good. And he's making them bring it to him, and it's working for him. And yeah, Cody's going to slump at times this year, but it seems like he's really figured some things out. And that is just going to build on itself, because, you know, it gives you the confidence and stop tweaking and just kind of do what you're doing and trust the results to come.
And, you know, and no one should really be going crazy at this one, because we're really only a couple of weeks into the season. Anybody can have a lousy couple of weeks. It just gets accentuated when it's the first couple of weeks. And you look up and you see that, you know, Mookie Betts has a, you know, is batting, what is he batting? 203 with a 6.86 OPS right now. Oh my God, what happened? It's April.
One-tenth of the season.
Right. Now, we're living in a strange world where at one point, Freddie Freeman got the big, huge home run against Atlanta, but then Freddie Freeman and the Dodgers lost to Kenley Jansen and the Braves. It's a weird world that we're living in sometimes when someone who is, you just so associate with one team goes to another. What's your thoughts on Mr. Freeman? How are you feeling about him so far?
I love Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman is, even when he was on the Braves, I don't know if you know this, this is kind of blasphemy for a Dodger fan, but my instinct, if you ask me my least favorite baseball team, my instinct is still to say the Braves, mm-hmm. even though I know it's supposed to be the Giants. But you know, it goes back to 1991. I got so annoyed in 1991 when suddenly everybody in Atlanta is a Braves fan. It's like, I've been watching your games on TBS for 10 years. I've been watching Skip Carey talk about the big crowd of 8,342 people in the stands. And Now suddenly everybody's a Braves fan doing the tomahawk chop, friggin' front runners. You know, like, my issue has always been more with Braves fans than the Braves themselves. But I still don't get over things very easily, as you can tell by the fact that 31 years later, I'm still upset about the 1991 Braves. And so I still have those feelings about the Braves, but I've always loved Freddie Freeman. I saw him, first time I saw him play in person was almost exactly 10 years ago. It was April 30th, I believe, 2012. I saw him hit a home run off, I think it was James McDonald of the Pirates. Was that?
He was a pitcher, and I think he did play for Pittsburgh.
So. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, and I've always liked Freddie Freeman. He's always smiling. He's friendly. Everything about him. So when he came to the Dodgers, I was super excited, because in addition to being very likable, he's also a really good baseball player. And he's the kind of guy, the Dodgers didn't need a first baseman, but Freddie Freeman is a guy you make room for. You find a place, if you have the chance to add Freddie Freeman, you do it. And they did, and he's been basically everything we could have hoped for. Watching him take those pitches, he had at bat in this game against the D-backs tonight, where it was just, you know, a curveball, and he waited till the ball was almost in the catcher's glove and he slapped it to left field, and just, you know, a classic Freddie Freeman hit.
Oh, Jeff, I think we have a frozen screen.
Oh,
are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. It was just frozen for a second there.
What was the last thing you got from me?
We introduced you as Jeff Snyder.
All right, let's start over. Hey,
you were talking about the Freddie Freeman going the other way. It was a classic Freddie Freeman hit.
Yeah.
You were really in awe of my knowledge of baseball.
Oh yeah, I remember talking about that a lot.
You're gonna liquidate the bobbleheads behind you and send me the money.
But yeah, so Freeman, you know, he can go the opposite field. He could pull a home run like he did in San Diego the other night, hit a blast to right field. Still, so far, the only home run of his career that didn't come for or against the Braves. You know, put that in your trivia bucket. I doubt it'll last for long. But yeah, yeah, Freddie Freeman on the Dodgers. It's my son still giggles every time he sees Freddie Freeman in a Dodger uniform because it makes us both so happy.
You know, it's weird when you have – you do see sometimes a player on a team that you don't like that you kind of go like, but I like that one. You know, for me, being a huge Red Sox fan living in New York during the Torrey years, I hated the Yankees. I just hated them. And I hated how everyone talked about, oh, you can't hate this group of Yankees. You know, they're so likable. And I kept thinking, watch me.
Yeah.
Just watch me.
You'd be amazed at Sully's capacity to hate.
I mean, like, I wanted to pull a John Belushi in Animal House and grab Bernie Williams's guitar and smash it against the wall. But there was one Yankee that I just couldn't hate.
It better be Mariano Rivera.
It wasn't. I hated Rivera.
Oh, I love Mariano Rivera.
He was the MVP of the – well, actually, I'm going to contradict myself because he was the MVP of the Aaron Boone ALCS. So naturally, I'm going to dislike Rivera. It was such a sweet, wonderful feeling, in 04. The other time the Yankees beat the Red Sox in the ALCS, the MVP of that series was the one Yankee I couldn't hate, and it was El Duque Hernandez. And the reason why I couldn't hate El Duque Hernandez was I love the fact that there was something mysterious about him, that we didn't know his entire history. We know he was a star in Cuba, but it's kind of shadowy. Like what were his stats? What were his things? Like, no one saw him
play.
How old is he? The way he held his hat, the way he kind of like, and he seemed to have this sort of kind of dark sense of humor that would sneak out, but he was so guarded that I just love the fact that in an information age, there was somebody who kind of felt like, who had an aura of mystery about him. And kind of, look, even the way he pitched, looked like he was holding his cards close to his chest. It wasn't like when Valenzuela came up and he came out of nowhere, but he was a complete open book. And everyone, you know, he would tell his story and that became kind of the lore of him. El Duque was like, you know, his brother Levon was a big star in that playoffs. He said, no, my brother's better. And he shows up in a raft on the Dominican Republic, and he shows up. And I love auras of mystery. You know, then and El Duque had that. And so I could never, even though he was a Red Sox killer, I just could not, I couldn't hate him. You know,
I respect that.
And you know, it just, he gave the Yankees a boost of energy that went beyond the stats. Because we look at his regular season stats, he wasn't that great. But in October, he just gave them a huge boost. Kind of like when I get a Built Bar. And you know what? Built Bars are the best tasting protein bars out there. Hey, have you tried the Built Bar Puffs?
Yeah, they're really good. It's basically like eating a marshmallow that's covered in chocolate, except you don't feel like you're a bad person for it.
Well, but it's because it's the first ever protein-infused marshmallow. And they've got great flavors. Do you have a favorite flavor? My favorite flavor of the Puffs are the banana cream pie. I love the banana cream pie, but I also love the churro.
Yeah, the churro puffs are ridiculous. They're so good.
Yeah. And, you know, all Built Bars, including the puffs, are covered 100% real chocolate. They're low calorie, high protein. You replace your candy bars with these. They're better. Did you know that candy bars are not good for you health-wise?
Look at me and tell me if I know that candy bars are not good for me, Sully.
Well, I'm not going to go there, but I'm going to tell you, you got to go to built.com. You scroll down to the macros charts. You're going to be blown away about the nutrition value of a Built Bar. Most contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which is a candy bar. But you got so many great flavors in Built Bar, including my personal favorite, which is raspberry. What's your favorite?
The cookie dough chunk.
Okay, that's good. I know Stacey Gotsoulias loves her mint brownie. There's also coconut almond. They're so great. New this month, you got the white chocolate cookies and cream. They're delicious. And the thing about Built Bars is they think about how do we make them taste good first, and then they worry about the nutrition stuff, okay? I don't know how they do it, but they do it every single time. You need to go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15, you get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off at Built.com. Hey, Jefferson, I want to just talk to you about just something that has nothing to do with the Dodgers, but it kind of hit me on three clips that I saw in today's games. There was Kyle Schwarber, who seems to be in every highlight reel, whether he's being called third strike at a 1-0 game and what a pitch could have been a pitch out. It was so far outside of the zone. Today, he hit a fly ball in the game between Philadelphia and Colorado. He hit a fly ball to right center field. Did you see this clip?
I did not.
It was it said, you know, the highlight says Kyle Schwarber 2-run double. So I'm thinking, you know, Schwarber, really strong left-handed power hitter. He probably smacked one off the wall. But what happened was he hit a fly ball to right center field. Blackman and I don't know who the center fielder is for the Rockies right now. It may have been Grichik. I don't know. I know it's not Carlos Gonzalez, but they did a little. I got it. You got it. And it fell right in between them. And two runs came in to score. And it was a big part. You even saw the pitcher pull a little, because he thought he popped up. You know, you have Carl Schwarber up there. You know he could hit that into the upper deck, of course, which is saying something because they were playing in Philadelphia. That's the kind of power that Kyle Schwarber has. So when you get him to pop up and you're thinking, all right, cool, you know, this is a huge out. And then that turns into a double. That to me, you know, it was a very weird play. And I'm going to bring up two other plays, and I'm going to make a point about this. In the Mets and the Cardinals played a bizarre game because it was Scherzer versus Mikolas, and it was 0-0 after 7. And the Cardinals rallied for 2 against the Mets bullpen. And then there was 2 outs, couple runners on base, and ground ball to Arenado, who threw across the diamond and for the final out, and it got away. It was a high throw, and a run came in. And then there was another ground ball to Goldschmidt, but the pitcher was slow to come and cover the bag, and they had a pinch runner come. I forget the Mets pinch runner, but the pitcher was slow to come to the bag. They threw to first safe, and the runner who was on second, the pitcher who was on second, never stopped running. And so the tying and go-ahead run came in on basically a grounder to first, and that the ball never got out of the infield. Now, the point I'm making is this. I hear a lot. Now, you had made the point that these players' jobs or the manager's jobs are not to entertain us, which is the great contradiction, because baseball is entertainment and it's supposed to be entertaining.
Yep.
You know, and what I, you know, there's what the 3 sure outcomes, a home run, a walk, and a strikeout. Okay. Home runs are cool. Great. You know, fantastic. We all love a home run. Walks and strikeouts. When you talk about the pace of play, you know, ball 4, okay, no one in the field does anything. Strike 3, no one in the field does anything. And when you get a ball hit into play, most of the time, I say 9 times out of 10, that ball to Arenado, he throws across the diamond, he's out. 99 times out of 100, that fly ball to the outfield is caught. 99 out of 100, that grounder to Goldschmidt, the pitcher comes first on time, he's out. But it's the possibility of someone booting the ball. It's the possibility of the player being in the wrong place or the outfielder going, I got it, you got it, and something unpredictable. That can't happen unless you make contact. And yeah. And I, you know, I get philosophically why people are like, well, it doesn't so much matter if they strike out because at least they're not grounded to a double play. Yeah, but also, the game's more interesting when the ball's in play.
For sure.
Something can happen.
Yeah. And you know, to be fair, like most outfielders aren't Charlie Blackmon. Most outfielders are major league quality outfielders. And so, you know, though most pop-ups don't drop. And you know, so there's some element of it. It's like kind of like the universal DH debate when people talk about, you know, Bartolo Colon's way overhyped home run, you know, or what, you know, the one out of a zillion moments when a pitcher actually did something with the bat. And I'm just looking at, okay, but the other 984% of the time, it's boring. And that's why I was in favor of the universal DH, because I want to see people do things they're good at, you know, and yeah, strikeouts are boring and they're exciting when they are more rare and it's your team doing the pitching. But even when your team is doing the pitching, it gets boring if they're striking everybody out, you know, because like you said, it is more exciting. I don't have an issue with home runs. I love home runs, and yeah, I even love walks, because walks resulted in base runner and there's potential for action there, you know, but we only get 27 outs per team.
But I will stop you there. Okay. I think the walks, I'll be on your favor if we're allowing more of a running game.
Yeah.
Because there are points when you have a runner on and there's a sense of, is he going to go? Is he going to go? And the reason is, of course not.
Yeah.
Of course he's not going to go.
But the thing is, a walk doesn't use up one of your precious outs. And baseball, there's no clock on baseball. It's measured in outs. You get 51 to 54 outs a game, and a strikeout uses up one of those. And so it's boring, and it gets you closer to the end of baseball. And a walk doesn't move you forward to the end. There's always a chance of excitement from the next guy. And so that's why I have a softer spot for walks. But, you know, again, going back to what we were talking about, how it's not Dave Roberts' job or Kevin Cash's job to entertain the fans. You know whose job it is? Rob Manfred's. Rob Manfred's job to create an entertaining game. And there are things that can be done and most of them would require some collective bargaining. And, you know, so that would be easier if Rob Manfred hadn't made enemies of everybody in the union. But there are things that can be done. If every team was only allowed to have 11 pitchers on their roster and 15 position players, then all of a sudden you've got six potential pinch hitters to always have the platoon advantage at the plate late in the innings, especially. And you have pitchers who know, oh, I might have to go two innings this game. I better, you know, keep a little in the tank. And so the problem is you've got every team has six guys who throw harder than Nolan Ryan did now. And five of those six guys you have never heard of. You, Sully, professional podcaster of the Locked On Podcast Network's flagship baseball program, expert in all things baseball, have never heard of at least 20 guys in Major League Baseball who can throw 99 miles an hour. And it's ridiculous. It's so hard to be a hitter right now. Well, if those guys had to come out and say, you know what, I'm only going to throw 97 because they might need me for three innings today. And if the starting pitcher knew, you know what, I got to go seven innings today because we only have six relievers and four of them pitched yesterday. And so I got to go a little bit deeper. All those things would create more offense. And by more offense, I mean more bat on the ball, because pitchers wouldn't come in firing and hitters would have more of an advantage, platoon advantage. And all of that would change that balance so that hitters would put the ball in play more often. And that would be a good thing.
I'll tell you just, and this will be my last thought. I don't disagree with anything you just said.
Of course.
One of the things I like in baseball is anarchy. I like chaos and I like anarchy.
Is that why you love the extra inning rule so much?
I hate that. God, I hate that. I hate that with a passion of 1,000 suns.
It's all
because it's because it's unearned valor. Okay. Like,
anyway, sorry to derail you. Go back to your original point.
No, but my original point is I like it when you see something that when the game goes off the rails. I love errors. I love weird stuff. I love diving, but I also love like amazing plays that are unpredictable. Like, you know, one of my favorite moments in the history of baseball is the Eddie Chavez catch. in the series against, and that was it, someday I'm going to write a list of the greatest moments in baseball history by the team that lost that game. You know, the Rajay Davis home run, the, you know, Endy Chavez catch, you know, the Dave Henderson's home run in the 86 World Series. There are a bunch of them. Like, I'm sure I can, you know, rustle up a bunch of those. You know, when you have either a great, like a totally unpredictable play like that, or a play that's just complete anarchy, an unassisted triple play, all these things that I love when you go like, did you see that? That was so weird, and or so glorious, or so stupid. You know, was it the Luis Castillo dropping the ball in a Mets-Yankee game, which would have been the third out of the game, but he dropped it and the tying winning run came in.
Or everybody mobbed A-Rod, who hit the pop-up.
But who also threw the bat down in disgust because he thought he had ended the game. Yep. The Mother's Day Massacre in Fenway, where they scored all those runs in the bottom of the ninth against the Orioles, ended on a slow ground ball to first that should have been an easy toss to the pitcher, and the pitcher wasn't covering it down, and the ball got away, and everything came in. You know, I love moments like that. And those happen when you put the ball in play. Mookie, it doesn't always happen. Yeah. You put the ball in play because it makes it more interesting and exciting. Absolutely.
Mike Trout had a check swing triple today. You didn't mention that one, but that was another crazy one. Have you seen that highlight?
I haven't seen that highlight. Oh, I'm dying to see it. I love Little League homers.
Yep.
I think those are... You know,
yeah, I'm with you, man. Yeah, putting the ball in play more often will make a much more entertaining game. And I hope that Major League Baseball will prioritize some of those things because it's frustrating and it's not going to get better on its own.
Do you know what's going to get better on its own? Listening to Locked On Dodgers, hosted by Jeff Snyder. Hey, Jeff, where can people listen to your great podcast?
Well, it's wherever you get podcasts and or on YouTube. By about 1 a.m. Pacific time every single day, it is there ready for you. Every single weekday, I should say. Me and my co-host, Vince Semperio, talking Dodgers all the time. It's a lot of fun. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. And I'm on Twitter at Snydog if you want to, you know, talk Dodgers with me directly.
And you want to follow us here. You can follow us at Lockdown MLB Pod. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter. Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Hey, Jeff, thanks for hopping aboard late at night. We're covering some of the games, talking about the Dodgers and stretching pitchers out and saying, hey, just put the ball in play. Put the ball in play.
Do it now.
Come on. Do what you're waiting for. I know what you're waiting for. You're waiting for the end of this podcast. This has been Locked On. I got to go to work tomorrow. This is Locked On MLB, Locked On Dodgers crossover for the 26th day of April, 2022. I'm your host. That's Jeff Snyder over there. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.